Steve, thanks for having me on. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. All right, let's start with the NBA players' decision in two parts. Number one, yesterday, the boycott, wildcat strike, whatever you want to call it. The Lakers Clippers then saying no last night, but everybody's saying yes to eventually getting back and playing. What's been your thoughts watching all of this play out?
Well, first I'd like to say that I think regardless of, you know, the way that the Bucks kind of handled the initial boycott, wildcat strike, whatever it is you want to attribute to it, they didn't necessarily do it in accordance with the rest of the league. They didn't really tell the other players right. or teams that that was their plan going in. Now, from all accounts and all reports, that wasn't an issue necessarily at the end of the day. I think all of the players understood why they decided to make that change and, you know, take that stand. As we know, the shooting in question took place, you know, in Milwaukee. That's obviously a place that the Bucks are closely tied to, you know, in Wisconsin, obviously. I mean, and, you know, regardless of the way that they went about it, I give the players credit for obviously using their platform, their voice, to try their best to enact this social change that they're all directly affected by and obviously feel strongly about. So, right. you know, from the initial point of it, I think everybody should understand that whether you think they should have played yesterday or not, these players are given a platform and a type of, you know, celebrity within our society. And when a situation like this arises that deeply affects them on a personal level, there's only so many ways that they feel like they can impact that scenario or that situation to make change. And yesterday, by not playing those postseason games, I think was their way of, you know, kind of putting their foot down and saying, like, listen, sometimes things are bigger than sports. And for that, you know, I give them immense credit. Shifting a little bit, you know, gears to the players meeting that took place later last night, we obviously saw all the reports that most teams had voted to continue the season. And it wasn't necessarily like a final vote. There was no finality right. to the Lakers or the Clippers standing up and LeBron James kind of saying, like, we should postpone the season or boycott the season, what have you. It was more of a polling. And, you know, Kyle Korver, there was a report, said that he stood up in the meeting last night and kind of admitted that the Bucks didn't necessarily know what they were going to do after their initial action, but they knew that they felt it was important to do something. So, you know, again, by them doing so and then being able to reconvene with the rest of the players inside the bubble, I think they ultimately came to this conclusion this morning that, you know, everybody had a night to sleep on it and see where they can go and kind of put, you know, rules and necessary changes that they think their owners and their league can make to help this social reform. But ultimately, it makes sense for them to continue the bubble. They all came here. They made sacrifices to get here. And to kind of finish what they're started is more of the sentiment today than it was last night.
And I know, for example, the families are going to be allowed to join the players that are remaining in the bubble. They're allowed to join them on Monday. My point about all this, Dennis, has been this. I haven't really gotten into the politics of it. I understand exactly why they decided to boycott yesterday. No issue with that at all. My point about playing is this. I really felt that if they stopped playing, they would then lose a valuable forum to express themselves because they're going to be in the media by playing every single day, which allows them to talk as players about anything they want to talk about, regardless of what you and I ask them. And I felt that was an important part of them moving forward, that they still would have the forum at their disposal in the media to use to their advantage.
I certainly agree with you on that. And Draymond Green actually had made a comment on an Instagram post that he later shared to Twitter and kind of expanded on a bit more, that these players, their talents, their otherworldly ability have afforded them that forum, like you mentioned. It's given them this opportunity, this platform, you know, like I had referenced earlier, to when these situations arise and something that deeply affects them, they have the platform and the ability to speak for voices that cannot be heard on a normal basis or aren't heard, rather, you know, day in and day out. And we've seen, you know, a great deal of that so far in this bubble, whether it were the eight seeding games or these playoff games that have taken place, you know, since the postseason has been underway, there have been players that have used all of their media availability to talk about any number of issues, most of them pertaining to police brutality and those that are affected by it. And I think that that is a great tool for them, because nobody's going to be like, well, why didn't you answer the question about the game that you just lost? Because, quite frankly, in that moment, that doesn't really matter. What they want to talk about is enacting this social change and bringing you know, people's attention to what's happening around them and affecting their communities directly. So by having that, and this is going to run through most of the, you know, the next month or so, it gives them an opportunity, like you said, to talk about it every single day and to not have this be a fleeting moment that we pay attention to while it's hot in the news cycle for a couple days. But to bring, I mean, if for the rest of the postseason, let's, you know, play it through real quick. LeBron James and the Lakers make it all the way through the Western Conference. They go to the finals. They win the NBA championship. If after every single one of those games, win or loss, LeBron James talks about this situation or another one that's related to it, we're not just going to forget about it. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to be there in our face every single day. And I think that's an important thing for these players to have and to utilize.
Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, Harris, you know, people know Al Horford. But in reality, even in the own, in the Philadelphia community, how well known is the rest of the roster? Because they're not really, they're not involved in this. But here's my point: if you're not really well known even in your own city, how are you influencing the masses if you don't have the media there to then accentuate your message?
Right, and that's what. You know, an issue like LeBron James, or, you know, if the Sixers were obviously still in the bubble, Ben Simmons, who has been very active, especially back in his home country of Australia, bringing awareness to this. Those guys that are household names across the country, regardless of if they're playing or not, aren't really going to have an issue doing so. But if somebody like, you know, a Malcolm Brogdon or a Sterling Brown, both players on the Milwaukee Bucks, Sterling Brown, who's actually in a current lawsuit with police in Wisconsin for, you know, police brutality situation, those players who aren't household names have the opportunity now, being inside this bubble with a microphone in front of their face every day, to be able to talk about that. Yeah, and that's exactly, like, if they were to just go home, I'm not necessarily saying that they won't be able to get their message out, because of course they have a bigger platform than you and I or Joe Schmo on the sidelines, like, you know what I mean? But it would be more difficult for them to really pierce through just the NBA news cycle. Like, right now, they have all eyes on them, not just in the sporting world, but the rest of the world is paying attention, too.
Right. Exactly. Good point, Dennis. Very good. Where to now for the Sixers? And you have to find a coach. It's interesting. They lost to the Celtics, and the Celtics drafted Jaylen Brown third overall. They drafted Tatum third overall, but they added in Gordon Hayward, who didn't, obviously got hurt in the series, and they added in Kemba Walker. The Sixers have Embiid and Simmons. Why haven't they been able to add in the other parts and then accentuate it and make them go further?
Well, the issue, I think, that what comes down to it with the Sixers is they did try to add pieces. They tried to add the Al Horfords and the Josh Richardsons. They did, but they went so in a philosophy, and I think more to your point in the question is about accentuating Embiid and Simmons and maximizing their talents. They kind of ignored the fact that you need premier floor spacing and elite three-point shooters around two players who, let's face it, for all the good that they do, they're not, you know, they're not Simmons won't shoot at all. And Embiid is really not that good of a long-range shooter, and quite frankly, you don't really want him doing that. So you needed to build around those two with players, and I look to a team like the Miami Heat, who are built around two players in Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo, who Bam does not shoot in his own right, much like Simmons. And Jimmy Butler, while he will take jump shots, he's one of the least effective jump shooters across the entire NBA. But if you take a scope of the rest of their roster, it's filled with players who can create their own shot or shoot at an elite clip. And that's something the Sixers, you know, in their philosophy and trying to build out the roster, and I think Elton Brand deserves a lot of blame for this, they didn't do in an effective way. And it's kind of put them in the situation that they are now, which is obviously, you know, a tough road ahead to try to re-correct that roster.
which is interesting. Now, look at the Phillies. They went from an analytics-based manager to then a pros pro in Joe Girardi. Can that be part of the Sixers' solution as they look for a new coach, or do they just need fresh blood all the way through?
I think they're getting caught up in the basketball mind, analytic mind, the way that we kind of look at the game can get, you know, a team kind of tangled up in the way that they try to build. There are good in both aspects, just like there, you know, there is in baseball. There's good, you know, being able to feel the game out for what it is, and then there's good in looking at the numbers and seeing what the data tells you. I think for the Sixers, it's obviously going to be, you know, finding a way to balance that shift back and not, you know, be so analytically driven, getting more, you know, basketball minds in there, like Elton Brand mentioned, as opposed to just guys that are going to crunch the numbers. But I think when it comes to choosing a head coach, their biggest issue at hand is finding somebody who can accurately and effectively manage the personalities. We know they have the talent, and yes, there are going to be pieces that need to change on the court around Embiid and Simmons to make them the best versions of themselves. But you need a coach who's going to come in there and knows how to manage their personalities day in and day out and really kind of hold them accountable for being the star players that they are, that they think that they are in their own minds, and then bringing them to that next level. So top of mind for the Sixers right now is bringing in a coach who, at the end of the day, can hold Simmons and Embiid accountable and maximize their talents on and off the floor, you know, as leaders.
Where are the Sixers financially if they want to change their roster by adding in a key player? Do they have the means to do it based on the cap?
As of right now, no. They are the most cap-strapped team with the highest payroll going into next season. If they want to make significant change, it's going to be in the effect of moving one of those four guys out. We obviously know that Simmons and Embiid are off the table. They're not going to be traded next season. Past next season, if these are the similar results and happens all over again, maybe you revisit that. But as of right now, those are your two pillars. They're not being moved. Horford and Tobias Harris, we know that they have inflated contracts. We know that that's kind of what keeping the Sixers, you know, strapped in their core right now of those four players. If you can find a way to move one of those two, I think you explore all those possibilities, especially if it's in the means of bringing back somebody who maybe spaces the floor better, who allows, you know, more three-point shooting around Embiid and Simmons. You have to look at all of those possibilities. But in the same respect, I mean, there might be the way that Elton Brand talked about it, and granted, it's a lot of GM speak, and, you know, they're not going to be as forward with the media or the fans as people would like. He did say he believes Al Horford can fit in on this team. So maybe when he's going through this process of hiring a coach, the biggest thing to him is, I have these pieces in place. I think they can work, make it happen. And then it's on the coach's job to kind of figure out how to do that. But I think if you can find a taker for Harris or Horford and try to, you know, open up the court a little bit more, you have to listen to all of those possibilities right now, because quite frankly, it just didn't work out in the most disastrous way this past season.
Which then brings me to Ben Simmons. Is he a point forward moving forward, and Shake Milton's in the lineup, or is there another, you know, where does Shake Milton fit into this? Where does Ben Simmons fit?
Yeah, I think what we get caught up in a lot of the times is that point forward, power forward, point guard dynamic. Like, we're in an era of basketball right now where a lot of teams play positionless anyway, and it's just about finding your five best players that best accent each other and putting them out there on the court. I mean, look at it, you know, P.J. Tucker and Robert Covington log center minutes for the Houston Rockets. We both know they're not centers. It's about finding the guys that can execute your plan the best way. So if that's having Ben Simmons play off the ball a bit more and having Shake Milton or anybody else who can space the floor around them, then maybe you do that. But this is all, that situation was made by Brett Brown in a last-ditch effort to kind of save his team, save his job, whatever it is you want to, you know, throw it up to. The new coach might come in and they might say, listen, Ben Simmons is perfect at point guard. We just need to change the pieces around him so that when he brings the ball up, he's not stuck passing to guys that can't shoot a three-pointer, effectively or at an efficient rate. And that's going to be up to that coach to kind of figure out, find its way, and move forward in whatever decision he decides to make.
Yeah, I think what Brett Brown was trying to do is he looked at his five best players and said, these are my five best players. And I think that's what he was attempting to do.
Right.
Dennis,
no, I agree.
Always a pleasure. Thoughtful, intelligent commentary as always. Thank you.
No, thank you so much for having me on. Have a great day.